It is The Drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. We talked about it at the very end of last hour, the lack of a high-end win for Illinois. I wrote this today, Kyle, and we were talking a little bit off the air. Number one, I opened my article saying Illinois is a very good team, have shown they can play with just about anybody in the country on a given night, but they're 0-4 against the heavy hitters, the big boys. You say that's fair? As far as very good, they're definitely not great. I'd say they're better than good, especially when you look at their roster, their metrics in terms of like top 15 in the net, 12th on KenPom, what have you. Have they beaten, do they have the resume in terms of high-end wins? That's literally what we're talking about. No.
No.
So very good, accurate description, do you think?
I think so. In my head, in my own kind of sorting process, I kind of break it down like this. I think Houston, Purdue, and UConn are elite teams. They're the three elite teams in the country. I think there's some great teams in Tennessee, Arizona, North Carolina I'd throw in there. Even I think Iowa State's been pretty great this year, and they've had some high-end wins.
Is Marquette in there?
Marquette healthy, if yeah, Kolek's healthy. I think they are in there for sure. And you probably could argue a couple other ones. And then there's a bunch of good teams. Like, I think Northwestern healthy is a good team. Nebraska's been a good team this year, just for your kind of Big Ten comparisons. Illinois is better than those teams. They're not great. So good, very good. It probably, like you said,
elite, plus, great.
Probably just really stupid in semantics in general. But I think there is a separation. They're like, you put Illinois in the tier like the Alabamas, the Auburns, Kentucky, Baylor. Those are very good teams this year. They're not great teams. They're very flawed.
I do like that. Call it what you want. They're probably a tier three team.
Yes.
That's a tier of those one seeds you mentioned, particularly the three of Purdue, UConn, and Houston. Then there's another tier of those that you find in the two seed range. Whoever's going to get that last one seed, whether it's Tennessee or Arizona, I would categorize either of those, rope in North Carolina, Marquette, as being a step above Illinois. And then Illinois is in that next level. Although there is even creating some separation, I would argue, especially when you look at resumes, three seed and then the mix of four and five seeds.
Agree.
Like Baylor has four top 20 wins. Kansas has five, including three against the top 10.
I would put Illinois up with Kansas this year, though, just eye test wise.
I agree with that. Creighton's a
really
handful
good.
Of good wins,
really
especially
good.
You know, they beat UConn on their home floor. Duke, the wins aren't as impressive. I think their lone top 20 win is against Baylor on a neutral. And Alabama doesn't have.
Yeah, Alabama's right there with Illinois. They can't quite get over the hump against their top competition, but they got one of the best offenses, not very good at defense.
Gave up 105 last night to Florida, right?
Yep.
Jeez.
Boy, yeah. Illinois, Alabama, or Illinois, Kentucky in the round of 32, and it will be in the hundreds final.
Unbelievable.
You probably get a heart attack watching that game, but it'll be one of the more entertaining ones.
I think that's even something as you look at it right now. We were kind of just having the discussion too. Could Illinois fall to a five? What would that look like? Does it matter? I do think in terms of the pecking order, even if they're not going to get up to a three, like having the ability to, if they're the top four seed, and then you maybe draw more of a favorable five, then as of right now, if you look at bracket matrix, Kentucky is right on the fringe of a 4-5. They're projected as the top five seed out there. I'd want to avoid them. And I know that you had the point, I don't want to steal your thunder, but one of the other things I was going to say, I think as you formulate the argument of where Illinois kind of stands, one of the things that didn't change with last night's loss is that Illinois has a higher ceiling, I think, than some of these other teams in their similar range. Now, I would put Kentucky up there in terms of a ceiling.
Absolutely.
Bama, you could argue, they can outscore people, but Illinois, because of Terrence Shannon, because of Marcus Damask, Coleman Hawkins, some of their just pieces, I think put them in a range where a one seed, even though those caliber teams have beaten Illinois, one and two seeds have beaten Illinois without taking a loss this year, that, you know, Illinois can play with those guys on their best night or on a good night for them. And I don't think that has changed, even though Illinois hasn't shown that they can, to this point, knock those guys off.
If I'm a one seed and I am looking at my draw come Selection Sunday, and you look at the four and fives that you can meet in the Sweet 16, it's Alabama, Illinois, San Diego State, Auburn, Kentucky, BYU, Clemson, Washington State right now. Kentucky would be the one I fear the most. Behind them would be Illinois. In terms of I'm a one seed, which team do I not want to play in the Sweet 16? Which team would strike the most fear in me? It'd be the one with Terrence Shannon and Damask, Coleman Hawkins being a matchup problem for some of those bigs like UConn has or Houston. That's just I still feel that way. Like, you look at Illinois on paper, you look at their star power and obviously their offensive firepower, and they are going to be a dangerous team. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they should beat a one seed, but if I'm looking down at Illinois, I still don't want to play that team. I think you got one of the best transition players that college basketball's seen here in a couple of years, and Terrence Shannon averaging 22, and a guy in Marcus Damask who's playing his best ball at the right time right now. Guy you can't – Zach Edey couldn't stop him one-on-one. And I just think the star power Illinois has makes them still a very tough matchup for anybody, while still acknowledging that I don't feel confident that they can beat a one.
Yeah, and if they get to that point, we mentioned it off the air, and this is not going to be a surprise to anybody because it's all anybody wants to talk about. The Sweet 16 will hit that marker that Illinois hasn't made in nearly 20 years. Like, that would satisfy people. Of course, if they lose to a one, and then you'd sit back and say, oh, they didn't beat any elite teams. They played Purdue twice. They played Marquette. They played Tennessee. They played UConn, or they played Houston, or Tennessee again, or Arizona. There would be that, well, they were a good team. They beat a five maybe to get to a Sweet 16. Good season, but I think you might even say great season if they make the Sweet 16, but you would have something lingering there that, hey, if they figured this out defensively, or if they made these plays in late game, or I know some might say, depending on what that final game, how it plays out, might say, if they had a point guard, there is that idea that if you look at the regional sites, like if they're playing UConn and Boston in the Sweet 16, just throw it up, man. Throw it up and see what happens. There's no pressure on Illinois after that. If you're out in Los Angeles in the West region and you're playing Arizona or Houston, just throw it up and have fun with it. See what happens. To give Illinois that chance would take a lot of pressure off of Illinois fans, Underwood, the players, obviously.
And if you go in there and you compete and you give yourself a chance, and a one seed that ends up going on to the Final Four just makes one big shot, kind of like Braden Smith did last night, I think you throw your hands up and you say, I'm pleased with that. Not to say that you need to be happy your season's over, but
yeah,
get there and you compete and you show glimpses of that ceiling and you give them a run for their money. And, yeah, like you said, you're just kind of playing with house money at that point. And if you win, it's a huge upset and a huge breakthrough for the program. And, you know, if you compete in that game, I think you probably accomplished what most people thought you would.
Right.
Or what is a realistic expectation.
Right. And great season might be a step too far, admittedly. Like, that's where it's hard because you compare it to, although I've long said and long established that I don't like the arguments that, oh, the tournament's fluky, even though fluky stuff happens. And, oh, it's, you know, they're just, don't put too much weight on the tournament. Well, we put a lot of weight on the NFL playoffs. We're talking about teams that are going to the Super Bowl that, if you're like me, a Bears fan, maybe you take a step lower and like, yeah, remember the year we were in the NFC title game and those type of things. No one cares when the Tennessee Titans were the one seed and lost at home to the Bengals. And you can go a variety of different sports. Postseason is what defines largely. I'm not saying it's all that people care about and should care about. And it's not it doesn't take away from proven, established, consistent success in regular seasons to put yourself in those situations. But I'm one of those that says don't shy away from the moment of the tournament. You need great teams usually win in the tournament. Like the teams that go to the Final Four, the teams that cut down the nets are usually, especially the cutting down the nets part, are great teams. And if you are one of those great teams and have a great season, it's on you to make sure you don't lose to a team that you're not supposed to lose to. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm not saying that, oh, you miss shots and that's just the way it goes. But I lean into that in that direction versus like the let's deflect and say, well, you know, the tournament just is the tournament. It can be fluky like that. On that note, though, so that's where it's like, okay, if Illinois gets to a Sweet 16, is it a great season? You could then compare it to 2020-21, which I think people largely, of course, called a great season until Loyola. Like, that team had, what, 12 or 13 quad one wins? They had 6 wins against top 10 teams in the net. They have what Illinois this year doesn't have. It's the top-end wins that put you in a better position in March. So that's kind of where, and I'm kind of going down a rabbit hole here, but I'll just kick it back to you, Kyle. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's probably just getting into this. Great season. It's probably semantics more than anything.
Yeah, right.
But
it's probably a little strong.
You get to the Sweet 16. I think that's what this team should be expected to do.
Yes.
This roster should be expected, especially if you enter as a 4 seed, which means you're going to be favored in your first round game, obviously, and then you're probably going to be a slight favorite in that round of 32 game. Getting to the Sweet 16 should be the expectation for this team. And, yeah, I mean, I think if you were to upset a 1, that would be a great season and get to, like, an Elite 8. But I think in the context of Illinois' last 19 years as a program and this drought of just getting there, just keeping yourself alive for the second weekend, it means so much more to Illinois particularly and to Brad Underwood, who's gone through his fair share of criticism. He's never been to the Sweet 16 as a Division I head coach. He's had chances. He's come up short every time. And for Illinois, a program that has had a ton of regular season success here recently, hasn't gotten there. In that sense, I think you could probably consider it a great moment for Illinois.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I do think that it's probably a little strong to say, well, if they get to the Sweet 16, we can consider a team with, you know, 2 first-team All Big Ten candidates and whatnot.
NBA draft picks.
NBA draft picks, 2 NBA draft picks, a guy who, if he didn't miss 6 games, probably would have been a first-team All-American. It's a great season to win, too. I think the ceiling of this team has always been higher than that, mm-hmm. So I probably wouldn't get there. But I do think there's no question, and you have to acknowledge that a Sweet 16, then that marker, which I know a lot of people push back, and I totally get it in that, well, why are we just striving for a Sweet 16? For this program, that will mean a little something different than it would to a team who's been there 6 times the last 10 years. And I think it'll satisfy me personally if Illinois is to get that far. And then at that point, like you said, you just throw it up, and anything more is a bonus, and anything more would be a great season.
Well, yeah, I mean, to get to a Final Four, to have a chance at a Final Four, you got to be in the building at that next location.
Yeah,
you got to make another trip during the tournament to where, okay, you come back from the regional site or whatever you call it from Pittsburgh, and you win 2, you go home, and then you fly out to Boston, and you're 1 of 4 teams in that building, in that region that are left. And you win a game against a 1 seed, then you're playing literally for a chance to go to the Final Four. You can't get to that point if you're not there playing in the Sweet 16. So Illinois hasn't been at that point in a long, long time. So, that is an accomplishment to get there. And it's a step that this program needs to take at some point, obviously. And I think that it's fair to say that there's some urgency to do it this year because you look at the roster turnover that's going to happen. Now, make no mistake, I'm not doubting Brad Underwood and this staff's ability to go kill it in the portal again, to find the next type of needle-moving get that might be similar. I mean, it's hard to sit here as you don't know names and situations to say, could they find another Terrence Shannon? I do definitely think they can find another Marcus Damask, but as they piece that together, we'll find out a lot more what that looks like. But next year will probably be a lot harder to go on a run versus being in position this year with so many old guys, with some continuity that's there, that there maybe is some extra expectation, pressure, call it whatever you want, that this should be a little bit more of a maybe a memorable type of run. Not only just to take the next step, but have a chance to actually do something that's significant, that we say, oh, remember in 2001 when Illinois was playing the Elite Eight against Arizona and got screwed because they, you know, 56 free throws, whatever, what have you. Even if it's not Final Four, I think that's fair too.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I just think, and we've said it before, just keep putting these really high-quality teams together, and it's going to happen at some point. But with that said, like, if you all of a sudden go out in the round of 32 again this year, and then next year in the portal era, I never want to call anything a rebuild year anymore, but it's probably going to be a roster that, unless home runs are hit by Brad Underwood, which he's done before, but we even saw it last year with all the turnover, and then you had a little more continuity this year with Shannon and Hawkins, and you pieced role guys around that. Last year when you brought in pretty much an entire new group of guys, it was a fine team, but it wasn't a team that really had that Sweet 16 Final Four upside. I feel like that could be the case. So if you keep extending it further in terms of just not getting there in the tournament, like you said, that's ultimately how you're remembered, and you can argue back and forth about how much weight should be put on what in college basketball, but no one really remembers your 15 Big Ten wins or your, you know, your seed in the tournament. They remember, well, how about that Final Four run, or how about that huge performance that X player had in the Sweet 16 to carry your team. That's what's remembered at the end of the day. So if Illinois was to fall short of that and continue to extend this drought on, there's no question that it's going to get to be a dire situation, and urgency is going to continue to tick up. And I think Illinois probably is one of the teams heading into this tournament nationally that has the most pressure on them, because you have a roster that should get there. Absolutely should get there. And obviously you look at a team like Purdue, who's got a little bit different scale of pressure. Like, their pressure is get to a Final Four, it's a failure.
Yep.
But for Illinois, you need to win two games with this roster. There is going to be a lot of urgency, and the longer that you fail to do that, the more people are going to be coming for your head. And that's just the way it goes, because the tournament's everything in college basketball. It's just, it's how it's, you're remembered.
Right. And on the note of, like, Final Four bust pressure, Illinois with Io and Kofi and Trent, it still would have stung immensely if Illinois wins against Loyola, then goes to the Sweet 16 and loses to Oregon State.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been a devastating loss and felt like a real missed opportunity. But of course, it would have broke another streak. And that was really the season, and paired with the one previous where you had a postseason that was canceled, where you're setting all these first time since 05s in terms of finishes in the Big Ten, Big Ten title, breaking streaks of games against, you know, Wisconsin and other Michigan, what have you.
I think you've pretty much crossed everything in the since 05 category other than tournament success at this point, right?
You really have.
Is that safe to say?
Yes. During this run here. So there is a mixture of both, as you do appreciate. And Wade says, huge Illini fan, I want tournament success, but as long as Brad makes the tournament each year and recruits well, I'll be satisfied. Tournament wins are icing on the cake. I did write this after last night. You do appreciate, and I certainly do, considering the teams that I've covered previously, Illinois going into the final week of the season has been mathematically, and if not very firmly, in the Big Ten title contention in four of the last 5 years. This year, they would have needed some help. They would have needed to beat Iowa, have Purdue lose at home to Wisconsin, which pretty unlikely, but going into last night, there was a chance. There was a chance that Braden Smith's not running down your court, pointing to his ring finger, saying, you know, ring me for the outright Big Ten championship. Last year, out of the question, Purdue ran away with it. Illinois was the seventh seed in the Big Ten tournament. Before that, you won the share of the Big Ten championship. You then, the previous season, won the most games in the Big Ten, should have been co-champs. And then you go back to 2019-20, the real breakthrough season. Some people forget this. There was a three-way tie for the Big Ten championship that year. I think it was Maryland, Michigan State, and Wisconsin. Illinois finished one game out of first, lost at Ohio State, had a lead at halftime, was 37-30, ended up losing that game on the road, and then they beat Iowa. Very memorable regular season finale. Had you not dropped that one at Ohio State, that would have been a four-way tie for a Big Ten championship as well. So you appreciate that you're in that conversation, that you've reached that point as a program. But yes, it does need to get paired with a run, especially a team like this where if you're a four seed, you're going to be obviously expected, need to beat a 13. And then even if the five wins, it's a kind of an eye level battle, but one that you should win because you're the higher seed.
Yeah. And I always look back at kind of the criticism on Underwood a little bit too, in that to me, there's only been one tournament game that he's lost that he shouldn't have, or that he wasn't expected to. Now, it was egregious. That team losing to Loyola in the round of 32 was inexcusable, and he would tell you that. But the other two were, and got robbed of a chance to go to the tournament the year before on a team that was pretty dangerous going in, and you lose to a Houston team that was like top five in KenPom and ended up going to the Elite Eight that was favored in that game. And then last year, there was, winning the first game would have sufficed last year. That would have been probably an overachievement for that team. So, but this year, yeah, if Illinois loses in the first weekend, it's a loss they shouldn't have taken. Maybe with the caveat of if they're playing Kentucky, I don't know about
that.
Yeah,
and you lose like 98 to 95 type of thing.
Kentucky may get to a point where they're the same seed as Illinois anyway. But pretty much, it's safe to assume that if Illinois loses early this year, it's going to be a loss that stings, one you feel like you shouldn't have taken, and it'll feel like you underachieved with this roster. So that's one. Once that happens again, that's a second time, then you really can start to have those conversations. And so I do think that they're, yeah, you're going to be expected to win two games this year, and it's going to be very important for a lot of reasons to do that. And, yeah, I mean, it's just, we've talked about this for so long now, but there, that is the one thing going back to the kind of the way you started this whole discussion is, yeah, it is going to feel different for this team if they just get to the Sweet 16 in the context of everything that has gone on here in the Brad Underwood tenure, and even just in the last 19 years since that 05 year, getting there will feel great for this fan base, I think.
It should.
And maybe that is kind of the roundabout answer to your original question, that maybe that does mean it would be a great season, but it'll mean something different here, and there's going to be a lot of pressure to do it for Illinois.
There's no doubt about it. Let's get, I keep saying we're going to get to your texts. I want to read through those, so let's catch a break. Let's get to those. Let's play some Brad Underwood before we get out of here. 217-359-2255. You still want to weigh in on the U of I Atlanta Link text line. We'll get through all your texts and play some Brad. This is The Drive.
Hi, this is Chris Jackson with Kramer Siding and Window. And whatever your project, you can count on Kramer Siding to offer you the best products backed by the best warranties in the business and a lifetime of great customer service. And right now, you can save 10% on roofing, sunrooms, and decks, get 15% off gutter helmet, and you can save 25% on preservation siding, windows, and doors. So call today or visit us at KramerSiding.com and let's get started on your project.
With the leaves and temperatures beginning to fall, it's time to make sure those furnaces are in great running order. Get that furnace tuned up so it doesn't let you down on the cold nights. Dogtown is the people's choice number one HVAC company again in 2023. Ask about the current 0% financing offer on all Lennox high comfort systems and single component units for qualifying applicants. The number's 217-841-4728. Dogtown Heating, Air, and Plumbing, your home's best friend.
If you're in the market for a new car battery, you could go to one of those big box stores, except there's no guarantee you'll be served by an actual car expert.
Clean up in aisle three.
You could pick a battery off the shelf, except it might be close to expiring. Or you could just come into Interstate. Don't make a big box store blunder. With competitive prices and a more personal, reliable approach, Interstate Batteries is the clear-cut choice if you want to guarantee yourself a new and trustworthy car battery. They're open and ready to serve you at 2504 North Mattis Avenue in Champaign.
Bet like the pros with the world's largest sports book right at your fingertips. Circus Sports is now available in Illinois. Hi, I'm Derek Stevens. I've been a lifelong sports bettor, and I'm the owner of Circus Sports. We're excited that the Circus Sports app is now ready for action. Experience big app bets with high betting limits, tight money line splits, and more. Now you can download, fund, and bet like a pro from anywhere in Illinois. Download your new bookie today at circusports.com. If you or someone you know may have a problem with gambling, call 1-800-GAMBLER or text ILGAMB to 833-234.
Since Busey Bank first opened our doors in 1868, we have built upon a tradition of close relationships and broad financial capabilities. Our experienced team provides the highest level of personalized service to ensure we accomplish your goals, simplifying your wealth management and business lending needs, and ensuring a legacy for generations. Building business, growing wealth since 1868. Proud to be the official bank of the Fighting Illini. Member FDIC.
In an ever-changing real estate market, it is so important to work with experienced agents like Russ and Nick Taylor with the Taylor teams at Taylor Realty Associates. They have the knowledge and expertise to get your home sold for the most amount of money in the shortest amount of time. Trust the experience and success of Russ and Nick Taylor with the Taylor team at Taylor Realty Associates. Give them a call today at 217-355-0700 or visit them online at taylorboys.com. That's taylorboys.com.
By now, you've all heard the expression, when you turn the key and the car won't run, call 367-9481 for PDR Automotive. They are what's best for your truck or car. They are PDR. But who are they? They, the PDR staff, understand that a name is only as good as the people that represent it. The PDR staff has more than 335 years of combined automotive experience. Several employees now on staff for more than 25 years. PDR, more than just a name. Family owned and operated, now celebrating over 50 years in business.
Hi, I'm Tyler Weaver, president of Carpet Weavers Flooring and Furniture Gallery. It's time to come home to Carpet Weavers. We don't want you to just like your new floors. We want you to love them. From waterproof floors and carpet to furnitures and design advice, we've got a team of experts on your side. We'll get you the best price and the best quality products and complete your home with furniture and accessories. Buy it all with free financing too. Come home to Carpet Weavers, where floors, furniture, and family meet.
Looking for a place to host a corporate meeting, intimate gathering, or a large-scale celebration? If so, the University of Illinois' Alice Campbell Alumni Center offers the perfect space and staff to make your function a success. A few rooms offered at the center include the elegant ballroom, the Richmond Family Gallery, and the premier and professional executive boardroom. For more information on renting a space at the Alice Campbell Alumni Center, visit uiaa.org/alumni-center or call 1-800-355-2580. Go Illini.
You've heard about the doggy bag, right? From Bulldog Disposal Muhammad, a 6-cubic yard canvas bag that can be used for easy cleanup instead of a big dumpster. The one-time use bag is now available and you can save the delivery charge. Get the doggy bag at Do It Best Hardware in Champaign at 107 West Springfield. So fill up the bag, call Bulldog Disposal, have it disposed of, and you'll be organized. Go to bulldoggybag.com for all the details. That's bulldoggybag.com.
BetLake the Pros with the world's largest sports book right at your fingertips. Circus Sports is now available in Illinois. Hi, I'm Derek Stevens. I've been a lifelong sports bettor, and I'm the owner of Circus Sports. We're excited that the Circus Sports app is now ready for action. Experience big app bets with high betting limits, tight money line splits, and more. Now you can download, fund, and bet like a pro from anywhere in Illinois. Download your new bookie today at circusports.com. If you or someone you know may have a problem with gambling, call 1-800-GAMBLER or text ILGAMB to 833-234.
I wish we just had that conversation on the air. Most of it. Back on the drive with Sam Piper, ESPN
Should
Radio
we?
At 93.5. No. Let's have some of it because, all right, we had Zach Edey on the brain both there at the break. And I wondered, and it lines with Lindy's text. He says, the few things that Crush members were saying crossed the line. Security had to come down, stand in front of the sections and calm it down. Other than those few, the Crush was awesome. So you had the Mason Gillis DUI chance. You had some blank you Edey chance. And I wondered last night, is there something I'm missing? Why do Illinois fans hate Zach Edey so much? And I asked you this, Kyle. Like, I know he's hard to stop. I know he's dominating. I know that you usually don't like players and teams that are ahead of you or what have you. I just didn't know. Am I missing? I want to put this out to the text line, 217-359-2255. Is there something from a personality standpoint? I know last night there were people talking about he stared down Coleman Hawkins after a block slash. Actually, it was the replay showed he hit his hand on that dunk and whatnot. So is there something more to it than Zach Edey just being – getting a lot of calls, which I know is true, and but is it personal beyond that?
Definitely not, at least in my personal opinion. I think off the court, Edey seems like a great dude. I don't have any issue with his personality or anything like that. To me, I mean, if you're honest with yourself, isn't the real reason that you don't like him is because he's so darn good? I mean, that's kind of what it boils down to. Now, yeah. I will say this is, I feel like he plays a very unenjoyable brand of basketball, and that's just, I mean, it's not really his fault. I mean, it just kind of comes with being a monster size-wise, but watching him play, I feel like he's playing in different sports sometimes where, yeah, it's officiated a certain way because of his height, and feel like there is a lot of times where you're not really allowed to be as physical with him as he is with other guys, just because you can brush it off and say, well, he's so big, of course he's going to elbow his way to some post yeah. position. So there's that aspect to it, and I just feel like, yeah, anyone who says that the 7'4 isn't carrying a lot of weight there and Zach Edey is lying to you. He's skilled. Absolutely. He's gotten a lot better. He's improved defensively, but the 7'4 is what makes him yeah. as good as he is. There's no question. And so it's annoying it's just annoying to watch. And at the end of the day, it's not his fault, but it's annoying to watch when you throw it into a guy 6 inches taller than everybody and he just, you know, takes two steps and dunks on you and you got no answer for it. And, you know, if you try to get physical, there's a whistle blown. And I actually didn't think that was the case last night.
Thank God. Just in general, that it wasn't that tightly officiated.
Just don't think
last night.
He's very enjoyable to watch. I respect the heck out of how good he is.
Yeah.
I think he's a good guy, but not a very enjoyable star player to watch in my eyes. I think a lot of opposing fans agree with that, and Purdue fans always, you know, say you're crying about it or whatever, but that's just kind of how I feel.
Do you think people felt that way about Kofi?
I'm sure they did.
No, it's different.
It's different because he wasn't 7'4".
7'4" are different. And I didn't think that Kofi got
I maintain he does not. Kofi got nowhere near the whistle Edey got.
Yeah,
if
I
he
agree.
Did, he would have been the National Player of the Year.
I agree.
When he was here. But I'm sure there was. I'm sure there was. But
I also felt, so Illinois fans, understandably with like the rivalry dynamic, but.
That's a good point in the text line too. It, yeah. I think some of it goes back to the Kofi matchups. Kofi never got the calls Edey does, and Illinois fans remember that. I agree.
Yeah.
There's something to that. Like, man, we had this type of dominant force, but it feels like he wasn't getting protected as much as Edey does.
I think that's a fair point for sure. I also thought, and trying to compare, I get why people hated Brad Davison. I get why people...
Edey's not a dirty player like he was, you know?
Right. They also had some distaste for. I remember getting in some arguments with my buddies and about Luka Garza. Like, I always appreciated how good Luka Garza was. I didn't think he had. If you're gonna dislike somebody for me as a, I'm looking at it from a media person. Jordan Bohannon was like an obvious hateable guy, especially
Connor McCaffrey was.
Yeah, true. Especially after Bohannon did the whole good luck having your banner taken down when they beat him. When Illinois beat him in the Big Ten tournament. Garza, to me, emotional player, yes. But I think he always respected Illinois, had a lot of good things to say about Kofi and Illinois in general. And
yeah,
I liked watching Luka play.
Me personally, I disliked Garza about the sixth most on that Iowa team. He was one of the more likable players.
Yeah.
And that's just part of it. Illinois and Iowa had a nice little rivalry going, and the fan bases were talking back and forth. And both were pretty equal quality for 3 years there. And you had the Kofi-Garza matchups. You also had the Garza comparisons to Io in award races that were going on. And I think that's really where it came down from. I don't think Garza necessarily was this super hateable personality or anything like that. Maybe some people will tell you different. I didn't necessarily feel that way. I think it was more so just the constant comparisons to Io and Kofi and him dominating those matchups and flexing down the floor. And again, he was really good, and it's annoying to watch your team lose to really good players, although Illinois beat him pretty good most times.
Yeah. He says on the U of I Line of League text line, watching Edie play is like watching a dad post up his 12-year-old son in the driveway.
It is.
Yep. That's a good point.
Great comparison. It looks like he's playing on a little Tykes hoop sometimes.
Doesn't it? Dan says, why not extend the game at the end, last 45 seconds? Illinois was down three with 45 to go. They elected not to foul. They played it out. Like we talked about earlier in the show, Lance Jones gifted them in a handbasket, an opportunity to have a lot more time than they should have left on the clock if they would have been able to secure that rebound. When he went to the basket, probably 16, 15 seconds left on the shot clock, did he airmail everything?
Yes. Yep.
Boy. But Purdue gets it. Dan says, when Edie caught in the backcourt, why not have fouled immediately?
I thought they did. I thought Coleman tried to.
It looked like he took a swipe at him. Yeah.
If I saw it wrong, I thought like the whistle was going to blow because I thought Coleman fouled him, because that was kind of how I would have approached it, is if you could get Edie to catch it, you foul him, because you had still one more foul before you got into the double bonus. So if you put Edie at the line for a 1-1 with like 40 seconds left, I think that would have been the move. If it's in Smith's hands, Lawyer's hands, Gillis's hands, I think you probably play it out, because you're probably giving up 2 points there. And you go down five with 40 seconds, and the way Illinois couldn't really buy a shot, and really their only offense is Marcus taking 20 seconds to get into his booty ball stuff and size guys up in the mid post. I think it was probably wiser to just be down one possession with 15 seconds left, unless it was a Zach Edey going to the line who had missed some shots. I thought they probably should have fouled when he caught it, and I thought they kind of tried to. But after that point, I think you probably just play it out there.
I wonder if Braden Smith doesn't make that shot, say, is it too early for then Matt Painter to foul up three?
Probably not. That's a good point, too. The being down three versus down two is probably important in it, too, because, yeah, even if you get it back with 15, Purdue probably does foul.
It's interesting. Didn't get to that point, obviously.
Yeah. I thought when Lance Jones took that shot, I thought we were going to get a huge break there, but
seemed that way.
Who would have gotten the three? That's the other thing. Let's say Purdue is not going to foul. You're down three with 15 seconds. Brad calls a timeout. Who you drawing a play up to get a three up for Illinois?
No one had made one other than Quincy, and he's on the bench.
That's the thing. I don't have a lot of confidence in only making a three there. I honestly think you try to get Coleman a three.
Looking at the box score, it was a real like kind of eye popper that he only had one 3-point attempt last night. And it was like from 30 feet in transition that was a bad shot. But
it looked like a methodical approach by Purdue to make sure that he wasn't going to get any space to get a shot up. Make him put it on the floor.
It didn't seem like Edie was on him a lot last night.
No. You're right.
Because some of it was by matchup, like Coleman sharing the court with Ty, or sharing the court with Dane, or sharing the court with Imani. But then also there were times where there was a stretch I remember watching that Edie was like on Goody, or he was just kind of sagging off. Like he wasn't on Coleman a whole lot, and that was one thing that schematically or just matchup-wise they did differently. Because in your mind, you should say, okay, Edie's going to have his post-ups against Coleman, but then Coleman can shoot threes, and he's been a 40% three-point shooter. You can live with that, especially if Coleman's making them. Last night, he didn't get but one attempt. So let's also, Muhammad listener says, I don't feel any different about this team today than I did before the game. I expect a Sweet 16 game. Should be the expectation. 217, Luke Goody can't be on the floor. If you want to shoot the ball, passed up at least four open threes, that's what he's out there for. He's got to shoot.
Yeah. I mean, and that's another
There was one
guy
from the corner in particular that I'm remembering.
Yep. And, yeah, you just had some looks that didn't go in. I know there was – obviously Marcus was doing a lot on offense, but I go back to that Justin Harmon shot. Man. Practice three. It's shoot around three. You got to make that shot at home. Big game to win.
Harmon's only made now.
Has he made a three in like 2 weeks?
I don't know. He's made two since the start of February. I think he's probably like 2 for 12 or 13, whatever the stat is. I know it's two he's made since the start of February. one of the arguments for playing Harmon over Rodgers is that a capable shooter that you can't cheat off of, you can't clog the lane on, but that's something that I know Harmon's made some plays late that have been huge, notably the drives from the corner into the lane for a runner. I thought he was big at Maryland. I thought he was big in a couple of different spots, but there have been some moments where he struggled too, and last night was not good. Last night was not good for him.
Yeah, I don't know. It's to me, I think the late game rotation was interesting. I thought that Guerrier probably should have played there late. I don't know. Harmon's been up and down. I think he's had some big moments, but like last night, there's games where he gives you nothing really, and I don't know. I feel like Brad has pretty much consistently gone to him late in games, and that's been almost like your fourth closer. Where has he really earned that? I don't necessarily know, especially if he's not going to make open looks.
It's going to be interesting as Brad continues just to evaluate what to do in late game situations. On that note, though, he spoke last night. I think part of his line of thinking going forward is going to be about getting, particularly when you have a lead, which Illinois did with 3.5 to go, getting those rebounds that complete stops. And maybe it is having Quincy out there as one of your better rebounders, especially when the motor's running high. Sometimes here over the last month, we haven't seen that type of rebounding tenacity. But Brad talked about the difference between winning and losing, some of those plays that Illinois weren't able to make last night to really close things out. Here's Brad on that and just late game situations.
It's not 2 minutes. It's two or three possessions. And that's the discipline that comes from doing your job every single time, doing your job and not taking a possession off. Going home is about a possession or two in this thing. And yeah, I mean, we're up 8 at Tennessee. I think we've been down triple or double digits against 3 teams, and one of them's Valpo. And we're right there. Again, you got to make Purdue credit. I mean, you can't guard it any better than we did. And yet you have to be tough enough and gritty enough and nasty enough and mean enough to come up with that rebound. It has to be yours. Can't be Mason Gillis. You know, and you can't make a play with 7 seconds on the shot clock and foul off the ball when they're at half court. You know, those are plays that you just can't make in a game like this. And again, we're right there, and that's why I beat it up in the locker room, be very honest. I beat those points up, because if we don't understand that we're really, really good and we can be a Final Four team, I believe that. I've said, I'm just telling you now, I believe that. But you got to make those plays. You have to make those plays. And you can put that in bold italics on every newspaper, on every damn chat line that I'd never read, and I don't care. Make big plays to stay alive.
Emphasis from Brad Underwood there. And what's a chat line? We were given amongst the media last night. I think he's talking about message board. We were kind of just messing with Brad. We knew what he was getting at.
He doesn't read them, or
he says he doesn't read them. No, I guess I doubt he's on our message board. But
no, I know he brings it up to say that he doesn't read them. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe he reads them, although he doesn't know what it's called. So yeah, I guess he doesn't. No, it's interesting too, because I know he's brought up specifically multiple times here recently that one play that lost him around a 32 game against Notre Dame. Mm. Where you get 3 taps at the rim and you can't get a defensive rebound, and that's it. And that's how you, and really, that was one of my biggest takeaways from last night, was, you know what? Purdue made the winning plays that a winning team makes in crunch time. They got their hands on all those loose balls. They made the big shots. And I think that is a very important thing that Brad Underwood does need to drive home, is that, you know what? That's, you just played a team that showed you what it's like to go take a game and to make the plays needed to stay alive, and Illinois just didn't quite do that, and feels like they've been that one or two plays away all year long against this top competition, and that's got to change if you have Final Four aspirations.
Real quick, we're going to catch one more break. Scale of 1 to 10, what's your level of concern just late game in general? Because it has applied, I'd say specifically late game last night, late game against Marquette. I think he scored like 2 field goals in the last 10 minutes of that game. But in some others that aren't in that realm of top-tier competition, obviously at Michigan State, Penn State was a debacle. Nebraska at home was a debacle, but you still won. But you had some other games, you know, Wisconsin, Minnesota, some others that you, Indiana, that you had to close out. So what's your level of concern and just Illinois' ability to close out games, whether it's lineups, execution, what have you, out of 10?
It's not that high. It's probably like a 4 because last night was just completely different than those other ones to me, whereas you had control late in those games and you made crucial mistakes to allow the other team a window to win. Whereas last night, I just thought a better team executed better and had a better second half than you did. Yeah. And that happens. And I think they had made some progress in that category against Iowa and against Maryland and against Minnesota, where they found that late game gear where they executed fine. They closed those games out. The Penn State I remain is, while they did a lot wrong, that's not going to happen again. You give me a 7-point lead with 34 seconds left in the tournament, Illinois is advancing to the next round. I have my concern 1 to 10 on that is a 1. But yeah, last night was just a different issue to me.
I'm with
closing
you.
A game out. It was a longer process of you had control and you let it slip away, and a better team made a lot of plays, more so than it was you should have won that game and you gave it away.
I'm with you on that. Final thoughts from the text line from us on the game last night against Purdue. What's ahead? We'll, of course, have a few days to break down Illinois and Iowa. One question we can answer before we get out of here: what would put Illinois in the 5 line, and what would be the – is there any hope left for a 3 seed? Any at all? We'll tackle that next. This is The Drive.
We all have a mission in life, something that drives us to explore, to grow, to love. And when we discover it, we're made whole. At OSF Healthcare, we want you to be the best you possible. We're here for you on your schedule to make your life just a little bit easier. Whatever your mission is, we're here to support it. Your life, our mission. Learn more at osfhealthcare.org/mission.
This is State Representative Adam Niemer coming to you with an important message. Far left special interest groups are targeting me because I am standing up for you. I was removed from the ballot over a clerical error, just like what they're trying to do to President Trump, and like him, I'll never surrender. I am pro-life, pro-family, and pro-Second Amendment. I am proud to be one of 7 to vote against allowing illegals to become police officers. I am in the fight of my life, and I need your help. Please write me in, Adam Niemer, for State Representative in the 102nd District on your primary ballot. Paid for by committee to elect Adam Niemer.
During challenging times, family and health come first. This is Rob Meyer with Provident Financial Group. Many of us have spent the past year feeling a little bit out of control, but there are steps that you can take to plan for a better financial future. Now is the time to take action and create a financial plan that's right for you. Contact us today at 217-366-3456 or online at providentfinancialgroupllc.com.
Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network, member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
Hey, where are you headed?
To Kelsey Furniture in Tuscola.
What do they have there?
What don't they have there? Living room furniture, benches, chests, love seats, sectionals, tables, bedroom sets, hutches, nightstands, end tables, cabinets, mirrors, stools, clocks, lamps, pillows, rugs, desks, media consoles, patio furniture, Tempur-Pedic mattresses, and more.
So, everything.
Yeah, probably could have just said that.
Kelsey Furniture, quality for less.
Relax, call back, 217-359-7293.
Every month we honor law enforcement because they deserve it. A 7-year guy, 8 years in Florida, 15 total. He's now with the Champaign Police Department, presently serves as a sergeant in the patrol division, Sergeant Austin Massey. Why did you get into this business?
Ever since I was really young, I was raised to respect law enforcement and appreciate that they are in their position to help us and be ready to assist at your worst time. Growing up, seeing the law enforcement in the community out there helping, just really something I wanted to do and be there to help people on their worst day, help make their lives a little better.
How do you approach each day?
You never know what you're going to get. Coming into work, you never know. It could be a nice, calm day, nothing going on. I can just take care of paperwork and get everyone squared away. But then the wheels can fall off and we can go call to call to call. It's almost instinct.
Relax. Call back 217-359-7293.
I'm Lily Ott. I'm a certified nurse midwife at OSF Healthcare. I see patients in some of the clinics that we are now opening, including in Urbana, Forsyth, Pontiac, Bloomington, and eventually Lincoln, and doing deliveries for women in Bloomington at OSF Healthcare there. Being a nurse midwife today is seeing women through all of their life. So seeing women, you know, pre-puberty through menopause, specializing in pregnant women and providing prenatal care, and then getting to deliver babies at the hospital setting with our patients that we've, you know, established the relationship with throughout their pregnancy. Yeah, I feel like one of the big misconceptions with midwives is that we don't deliver in a hospital setting and that we don't support pain management, which is not true. We deliver babies at the hospital setting, and we support women in any way that they choose to have their babies. So whether that be with an epidural, without an epidural, we're there to support no matter what they decide and kind of just help their labor be what they want it to look like.
Finishing up here on The Drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. I pitched it out there for Illinois to drop to a 5 seed, Kyle. What do you think that looks like? Probably starts with losing in Iowa City on Sunday.
Yep. I think if they lose Iowa City on Sunday and then they lose on Friday at the Big Ten tournament, they're probably pretty firmly a 5, I'd have to imagine.
3 seed, any chance?
Go win the Big Ten title. And I think you'll be right there.
Yeah, that's probably the best way. I don't think anything short of that's probably getting there.
Yep.
Because as I've talked about, those that are protected on the 3 line right now all have multiple, I think outside of Duke. Duke has 1 top 20 win in the net. But Creighton has like 4 and Kansas has 5.
And I almost also think, too, win the Big Ten title against Purdue.
Yeah, it's got to be Purdue.
If Purdue gets upset, that hurts you. Like, it increases your chances to win the title, but that probably does more damage to your chances to get a 3. It almost has to be Purdue. You got to have that signature win.
And I know that we've mentioned this, and a number of people have voiced it as well. When you get to that game that's just hours before the bracket is revealed, how much does it matter, that Big Ten tournament championship? But it has to. If Illinois were to beat the top overall seed in the NCAA tournament, projected-wise, that win has to carry some weight. Like, it has to move them somewhere, unless they're just already in a place where the team in front of them is that much further ahead. But that's a neutral floor against a top 3 team in the net. Now, granted, again, that would be Illinois' first top 20, top 10 win. Some teams that are on the 3 line have multiple of those. So it'll be interesting. You'll have to root against the likes of Creighton, of Duke, who plays North Carolina this weekend, and a few others. I know you mentioned off the air Alabama, a team that's ahead of you on the 4 line right now, but will be interesting. Will be interesting for sure. One more other quick note. Michigan State hosts Northwestern tonight. If you're an Illini fan wanting a 2 seed in the Big Ten tournament, you want Michigan State to win that game. Otherwise, Northwestern, if they win out and Illinois loses on Sunday, they would drop to the 3 seed. So there you have it. Thank you to Luke Goody joining us on the Tapman's Towing phone line. Good conversation. Got an answer out of him as far as the senior night discussions. And Lante, I believe, will be back tomorrow. Talk more hoops as we go along. Preview Illinois-Iowa. And yeah, there you have it. 77-71. Purdue last night. Disappointing for Illinois, but still a lot to play for. It's March. Fun time of year. All right. We're out. Talk to you tomorrow. This is The Drive.